Thank you for listening to The Rest is History. For bonus episodes, early access, ad-free listening, and access to our chat community, sign up at restishistorypod.com. That's restishistorypod.com.
There's a lot that could impress you about the all-new Honda Prologue EV. True, it's got class-leading passenger space and clean, thoughtful design and intuitive technology. But what really sets the Prologue apart from the competition is that it's more than an EV. It's a Honda. Honda, the power of dreams. Visit Honda.com/Prologue to learn more.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh, how so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit, or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at IKEA-USA.com/circular. Visit IKEA-USA.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Welcome to The Rest is History. We are at number 2 in the 12 days of Christmas. But The Rest is History being The Rest is History, we're not really doing the 12 days. We're doing the 13 days, aren't we, Tom?
We are.
Do you want to explain why we're doing 13 days for those people who missed day one?
Well, because the 12 days of Christmas, you can begin them either on Christmas Day or on today, Boxing Day, the 26th of December. Because we're gluttons for punishment, we're hedging our bets and we're doing both. So this will be running to the 6th of January.
And for those of you who missed the first one, we chose two very light, frivolous subjects. Yes. We did the coronation of Charlemagne and the birth of the Holy Roman Empire. And then we did the resignation of Mikhail Gorbachev and the end of the USSR. So two very jolly, festive, seasonal topics.
One of them is definitely very, very seasonal and festive.
Yes.
And they're both musical.
And they're both jolly, aren't they?
They're both jolly, yes. So I've chosen Good King Wenceslas looking out on the Feast of Stephen when the snow lay round about, deep and crisp and even. Brightly shone the moon that night, though the frost was cruel, when a poor man came in sight gathering winter fuel.
Do you not want to sing that? You're not going to sing that?
I'm going to sing it a bit later on.
Oh,
I've got another
exciting
verse to sing.
That's something for people to look forward
to. You can probably tell from my... I've got a slightly sore throat.
Yeah. So when are we, Tom?
Well, so when are we? So this carol, very famous one, is written in 1853, the lyrics.
Okay.
By a man called John Mason Neal.
Yeah.
Who is Anglo-Catholic. So he's Church of England, which is Protestant, but he's very keen on the kind of Catholic inheritance of the Church of England. So he's keen on saints and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so he's interested in the example of Good King Wenceslas, who is a Bohemian saint from the 10th century. And so the music that he uses is actually, it's not Christmassy, it's associated with Easter.
Ooh.
So it's a 13th century hymn, Tempus Adest Floridum. So Tempus Adest Floridum, which means, of course, it's Easter.
Okay.
So isn't that amazing? So that's a kind of interesting detail.
But of course,
begs the question, so who is Good King Wenceslas?
That's what I want to know. That's what the listeners want to know.
Do you know, he was good, but he wasn't a king.
Was he a duke?
He was a duke. He was the Duke of Bohemia. And he's around the same time as Athelstan. So he's ruling Bohemia at the same time as Athelstan is becoming King of England. So 920s, 930s.
I'm just looking up his dates now. 921 to 935.
Yep. So pretty much exactly the same time as Athelstan.
And he really was, yes, I'm reading it as we speak. He really was called Wenceslas.
Yeah.
I'd assume that was a sort of anglicization of some impenetrable Slavic name, but
he's because he's so saintly and holy. And as we'll discover, because he gets murdered and therefore people say he was martyred, He's posthumously created a king by Otto the Great, who we mentioned yesterday.
Very much a friend of
the 12 Days of Christmas. We should try and work Otto the Great into every single episode. So he is, I think he's the grandson of the Bohemian who'd converted to Christianity. He's just rushes around, you know, he's a bit like Scrooge after his visit from the three ghosts.
Right.
He just rushes around kind of handing out stuff to poor people. And the original story, but his deeds, I think you know better than I could tell you, for as is read in his passion, no one doubts that rising every night from his noble bed with bare feet and only one chamberlain, he went around to God's churches and gave alms generously to widows, orphans, those in prison and afflicted by every difficulty, so much so that he was considered not a prince, but the father of all the wretched. So
good,
that story
nice
of him seeing a poor man gathering winter fuel, and he summons his page and they go out and the page struggles. So the page sings, "Sire, the night is darker now, and the wind blows stronger. Fails my heart, I know not how, I can go no longer. Mark my footsteps, good my page, tread thou in them boldly. Thou shalt find the winter's rage freeze thy blood less coldly." So that's the miracle.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. So that's the miracle, is that Good King Wenceslas, he has a kind, you know, he has a thermal quality to his bare feet.
Yeah. He's a radiator.
he's a living saintly radiator.
But
he has a brother.
Yeah.
Who brilliantly is called Boleslaus the Cruel. So you can imagine them growing up in their Bohemian nursery.
Yeah.
Oh, and there's a massive clue, you know, a huge clue that it's not going to end out well when your brother's called the Cruel.
Boleslaus, I'm looking at this. Boleslaus is four years younger.
Yeah.
So he probably is driven mad by Wenceslas's niceness and kindness.
He's rushing. Yes. I mean, you know, he can't go out in the snow and warm it up with his radiator-like feet. So he gets cross and there's a coup and Wenceslas gets run through by a spear. Some say, held by Boleslaus himself.
Oh, golly.
And so Boleslaus is actually quite a good king.
Yeah, I'm reading it. This is a fascinating story, Tom. It's so fascinating that while you're talking, I'm actually reading a webpage on it.
Okay, we'll contribute, you know.
No, I will contribute. I'll tell you a fact. So according to tradition, at the very moment that Wenceslas was murdered, Boleslaus had a son. His son was born. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Do you know what his son was called?
I can't remember.
Strashkvass. Do you know what that means?
No.
A dreadful feast.
A dreadful feast? Yeah. Well, that's fair enough then, isn't it? And did he have a sobriquet?
Well, I mean, does he need a sobriquet? I mean, if you're called a dreadful feast.
Dreadful.
So he doesn't succeed, Boleslaus. Boleslaus is succeeded by his eldest son, who's also, do you know what he's called?
No.
Boleslaus the Pious.
Oh, so you've got Good King Wenceslas.
Yeah.
Boleslaus the Cruel, Boleslaus the Pious.
It's a real rollercoaster for Czechs, isn't it?
So Bohemian history in the 10th century is great. And the story is, Wenceslas, for the Bohemians, for the Czechs, is a bit of a King Arthur figure.
Yeah.
So it is thought that he's asleep underneath a mountain, and that when the Czechs need him, he will wake up. Or that there's a large statue of him in Prague, in Wenceslas Square,
Apparently
enough. And that statue will come alive and he will lead a procession over the bridge, Charles Bridge. And he will stumble. And as he stumbles, his sword will be revealed.
Ooh.
Brunchvik.
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 That's a good name for a sword. I will say this. If Wenceslas were planning to return, I think he would have done so already.
Yes,
the Czechs had a pretty tough time in the 20th century.
Yeah.
And there were multiple opportunities for him to make his appearance.
But
and he failed to do so.
Yeah.
Poor. So
unless there's worse to come.
Also,
which we hope not.
If you know, surely you'd want Boleslaus the Cruel to come back, wouldn't you? I mean, he's the person you'd need in your army. You wouldn't want
it depends
if you're going around giving presents to people.
It depends if you're walking barefoot in the winter or not.
I suppose so. Yeah.
Because if you're doing that, you definitely want
Red Army tanks and the Prague Spring.
With
the last man he wants is Wenceslas, the Good King Wenceslas.
Well, maybe that's why he didn't come. Maybe the great crisis facing the Bohemians, the Czechs, will be that they need someone to warm up the pavements with his feet.
Yeah.
And that's what he'll do.
Have you seen this thing that the Czechs have renamed their country in the last few
Czechia.
Years? Czechia. Yeah, you see it on Google Maps.
Yeah.
Rather than the Czech Republic. Do you think Czechia will catch on?
I wish it was called Bohemia.
But it can't be because of Moravia. The Moravians don't want it to be called Bohemia. And to call it, because it's actually made up of three regions, Bohemia, Moravia, and part of Silesia.
But I'm really sad that Bohemia has kind of vanished from the map.
Yeah, it's a good name.
It's a bit like Persia.
Yeah.
There's kind of romance to it.
I agree. There's a great romance to it. It's very 30 Years' War, I always think, kind of.
Well, very, very 10th century, I think.
Yeah. Well, anyway. So that's Bohemia. That's Good King Wenceslas. Should we take a break now, Tom? Have you got anything more to say about Good King? Do you want to do more singing? Do you want to sing us out?
No, because because when we come back, we're doing Gilbert and Sullivan, aren't we? So
And I can assure you, I'm absolutely not going to be singing.
Are you not?
No, because the music is lost. So I've got a good reason.
But you could sing some Gilbert and Sullivan. Very model of a modern major general.
I am the very model of a modern major general. Goodbye.
There's a lot that could impress you about the all-new Honda Prologue EV. True, it's got class-leading passenger space and clean, thoughtful design and intuitive technology. But what really sets the Prologue apart from the competition is that it's more than an EV. It's a Honda. Honda, the power of dreams. Visit Honda.com/Prologue to learn more.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hello, welcome back to The Rest is History on Boxing Day, St. Stephen's Day, 26th of December. We've ticked off Good King Wenceslas, looking out. And now, Dominic, you have another musical number for us, Gilbert and Sullivan themed.
I do. So Boxing Day is a day of jollity and a day of music.
Boxing.
And a day of, just a day of general sort of hijinks and stuff. So I thought Gilbert and Sullivan would be a great place to come in. So Gilbert and Sullivan, the great kind of Victorian sort of light opera stars of British popular culture, incredibly popular around the world, particularly in America. So if you look at the list of kind of amateur performances and things of Gilbert and Sullivan plays, I mean, the number in America is mind-boggling. But their very first play, Tom, it's a Greek theme, you see. That's why I thought, that's why I picked it. So their very first collaboration in 1871, starting on Boxing Day 1871.
That's the day it opened, is it?
Yes, the day it opened. The Gaiety Theatre was a play, an opera called Thespis, or The Gods Grown Old. So you've got these two characters. You've got Gilbert, who's a bit older, who's the son of a naval surgeon. He does the words. And Sullivan, who's a great composer, son of a military bandmaster, who's born in 1842. And he does the music. Now, Sullivan sees himself as a sort of serious composer, which he was. And unfortunately, he's always, you know, he's sort of, it's the classic
with
thing.
A comedian.
Yeah, it's the classic thing. It's sort of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle trying to escape Sherlock Holmes. That Sullivan is always slightly trying to escape Gilbert and Sullivan, but Gilbert kind of drags him back in with his stories of magic lozenges and things of this. Pirates.
Girls and
all of this sort of stuff. So they get brought together to work on this opera. It's basically a Christmas entertainment. The plan is for it to just run for a few weeks or months. It is advertised as an entirely original grotesque opera in two acts.
I like that, a grotesque opera.
So if you're going to enter an opera, you want it to be pretty grotesque, I think.
Yeah.
So the story, do you want to know the story, Tom?
Well, I'm so Thespis is an the first actor.
Yeah, the father of drama. Or yeah. Is he the first actor, or
he's the person who first acts in a tragedy.
Yeah, exactly. So the plan is, so the story is that basically the gods have grown elderly on Mount Olympus, and they're just bored, and they feel like no one listens to them anymore.
And is this set in ancient Greece or in?
Yeah, in ancient Greece, not modern Greece.
Okay.
So they fancy a change, and they decide that they will swap places with Thespis and his actors. So the actors all come up to Olympus, and the story is basically them trying to rule the universe, and they are terrible at it.
And does hilarity ensue?
It does. So the replacement, do you know the replacement for Mars? Do you know what his name is? Timidon.
Oh, that's
and Timidon. Do you know what's so comic about this? He's a pacifist.
He's a pacifist.
It's hilarious.
Yeah.
The substitute for Hymen, the kind of goddess of, what's she, the goddess of marriage?
Yeah.
She doesn't want to marry anybody. That's the joke. She's a confirmed spinster. And the guy who's replacing Pluto.
He's a spendthrift.
No, he doesn't like anybody dying. Doesn't let anybody die. Doesn't want anyone to come to the underworld.
God, hilarity does ensue.
Yeah, it's mayhem. It's absolute mayhem. It's hilarious. The gods down on Earth.
That's what you want of a boxing day.
The gods down on Earth are they're shocked by this. Carry on. And they return to Olympus, and they kick out the actors, and they say, go back to Earth. Your fate is to become eminent tragedians whom no one ever goes to see.
That's funny. That's still funny.
And that's what happens. So it runs. So this opens on Boxing Day, and it runs for 63 performances.
Which is a success.
Which is a great success. And everybody thinks, or lots of people think it's very funny. The public think it's funny, but the critics are not terribly impressed. So do you want to hear a couple of the reviews?
Yeah.
A publication called The Hornet.
You wouldn't want to be reviewed by The Hornet.
You wouldn't. So the problem is that they review only the premiere, and the premiere is much, much too long. So in the adverts, the management of the Gaiety Theatre have said you must book your carriages for 11 o'clock, but it's gone past 12 and the play is still going on at midnight.
The japery is still
so
ongoing.
The Hornets, the play is actually called Thespis or the Gods Grown Old, but the headline on the Hornets review is
the
Thespis,
follows.
The Gods Grown Old and Wearisome in capital letters. The morning advertiser says it is a dreary, tedious, two-act rigmarole of a plot, grotesque without wit and the music thin without liveliness. The curtain falls before a yawning and weary audience.
But apart from that, how did you enjoy the play?
Yeah. So the music, I think, is lost. That's why I can't sing it, much as I would like to.
Oh, that is a shame.
Because obviously at that point, no one knows that Gilbert and Sullivan is going to turn out into this tremendous franchise.
But how come they haven't kept the music?
How come they haven't kept the music?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Sullivan just probably dashed it off.
Just thought
this is a load of old tosh. Mm. Make some money out of it.
Quite odd not to have kept it, though.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't claim to be a Sullivanologist.
Okay.
So anyway, their next thing is a thing called Trial by Jury. That's, I think, reasonably successful. And then they get into the world of topsy-turvydom. Do you know, have you seen the film Topsy Turvy?
No.
It's great.
Is that
actually
the Mike Lee film? No, I haven't.
It's really good.
I've never seen the Gilbert and Sullivan. I don't know anything about them. I mean, I do, because I vaguely know.
That Paris of Penzance.
Very model of a modern major general. And all that
the Mikado, a short, sharp shock.
Yeah.
I think Gilbert and Sullivan, for people of our generation, is slightly tainted because it's the kind of thing that's very unlovely. unlovely. Sort of John Major era cabinet ministers would recite at Tory party conferences.
They would.
As part of an attack on single mothers.
Yes. It was Peter Lilly, wasn't it?
It was. He sung a bit of Gilbert and Sullivan, and the audience loved it, but the rest of the country
was absolutely appalled. And voted for Tony Blair.
Yeah. Yes. But I think Gilbert and Sullivan is very jolly. It's all sort of gentle satire of institutions and so on, which still stands.
So should I watch one? Would you recommend I should?
I think the Mikado is. I think you should watch Topsy Turvy, the film, because that is brilliant. Jim Broadbent is.
Do I need to know about it?
No, you can know nothing about it at all.
Okay, I'll do that.
It's a brilliant recreation of Victorian England and of that world. And then the most famous ones are probably the Pirates of Penzance and the Mikado.
And the Mikado, yeah.
Though the Mikado is now in danger, isn't it? It's been seen as the ultimate cultural appropriation because it's all about Japan. It is
three little maids. Three little maids are we?
Three little maids. I don't know the words, but that's how it goes. Anyway, yeah. It's I've seen the Mikado and it's very
They're
jolly.
Chinese, aren't they? No, Japanese.
So Gilbert had been to an exhibition of Japanese sort of art and stuff, and that gave him the idea for the Mikado. But it's actually not about Japan. I mean, the joke is it's a kind
the
parody
great Pooh Bar.
Yeah, the great Pooh Bar is like the a sort of the civil servant.
I mean, it's clearly it's a bit like The Importance of Being Earnest, or that you don't have to have seen it. It's kind of exactly. floats around as, you know, vaguely synthesized idea.
And there are these idioms like a short sharp shock that have sort of penetrated into the language because of Gilbert and Sullivan, and actually just as popular in America. So you'll see loads of references to it in kind of, you know, that sort of kind of American, tweedy American columnist who will quote Gilbert and Sullivan.
Yes. So the Mikado is genuinely problematic, is it?
I don't think it is genuinely problematic because people fought back against its cancellation because they pointed out it's not meant to be about Japan.
It's about Britain, isn't it?
It's about Britain. It's a satire of Britain. Yeah, exactly. It's that kind of thing. It's a satire of Britain and it uses the joke is that it's a bad version of Japan and it's not a real.
Well, that's very up to date satire.
So I think everybody should watch Topsy Turvy. Is a brilliant Boxing Day film. It's very jolly.
Well, do you know, Dominic?
Great music.
You've inspired me. I will watch it on Boxing Day. I'll watch it today because, of course, today is Boxing Day.
Brilliant, brilliant. You haven't given the game away that we're recording before.
I know. I almost blew it there, but I think we got away with it.
Yeah, I think you did.
So anyway, have a very happy rest of Boxing Day, and we will see you tomorrow with our choices for two events that fell on the 27th of December.
Bye bye.
Thanks for listening to The Rest is History. For bonus episodes, early access, ad-free listening, and access to our chat community, please sign up at restishistorypod.com. That's restishistorypod.com.
I'm Anthony Scaramucci, former White House Director of Communications and Wall Street financier.
And I'm Katty Kay, U.S. Special Correspondent for BBC Studios. I've been covering American politics for almost three decades.
Welcome to The Rest is Politics U.S., brought to you by Goalhanger.
Go on, tell us, were those donations you made, like Obama in 2008, was that idealism? Were you hoping to get something out of these campaigns that would serve your own business interests, for example?
So I think this will either make this podcast incredibly successful, Katty, or people will be horrified and they'll shut it off right now because I'm going to be very real with you. The Obama donation, I had gone to law school with President Obama. We were not classmates. I was a few years ahead of him. It was 2007. He was then Senator Obama. I had a check in my breast pocket. I went over to the senator. I said, Senator, I said, you and I didn't really know each other in law school, but I'm about to hand you a big check. Can I lie to my friends and tell them that you and I knew each other in law school? Well, Obama looks at me, had the best smile in American politics since Jack Kennedy.
Forever.
Yeah. He lights up. He looks at me and says, I'll tell you what, if you double the amount of the check, we'll take it back to Hawaii. Okay. And I looked at him. I said, you're done. I had another check in my pocket. I ripped it up. I doubled the amount of the check. And I'm going to tell you right now, I've been to more White House Christmas parties during the Obama administration than the Trump administration.
In this pivotal year for the United States, democracy, and world affairs, Britain's biggest podcast, The Rest is Politics, is launching stateside.
Uncovering secrets from inside the Biden and Trump inner circles and how they shape the world's most important economy, but also the global economy too.
New episodes are released every Friday morning.
Just search The Rest is Politics US wherever you get your podcasts.